Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I'm your host, Ethan. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest co-host, David, from the YouTube channel DB Tech. David, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here again. We did one of these, something like this about a year ago. We're about to do another one here real soon, and I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, it feels good to be back. Familiar faces and conversations. So, as usual, we have a lot to cover this week, but I do have a couple housekeeping items I wanted to talk through quickly before we jump in. First, you may have noticed our hosting lineup has changed since last week. Given the complexity of compiling a weekly newsletter while also publishing a show based on that newsletter in a timely manner makes it a little difficult on Fridays to schedule and coordinate getting everyone together on a call to record something. And so with that being said, moving forward, I'm probably going to be inviting several various guest co-hosts on the show based on the timing of recording and what availability looks like. And there may be occasional weeks where I'm flying solo. Again, just the complexity of wanting to publish the newsletter as late as possible. So I'm including all content, but also give myself and the team adequate time to post, to record and post and publish by the time the newsletter is going out on Friday morning. The last item on my list, many users asked last week if they could have a podcast version of this show. And so we're going to go ahead and publish, starting this week, the show to my existing podcast, which is called The Self-Host Cast. Currently, I just feature long-form interviews with self-hosted developers and other content creators. I will begin publishing This Week in Self-Hosted on that same podcast, and I will include a link in the show notes below. So with all that being said, let's go ahead and jump into this week's newsletter. I'm going to kick it off with the opening section, just have a couple PSAs. The first one actually pertaining to David, which we had kind of referenced just a little bit ago when we talked about revisiting something. As many of you know who watched last week, and if you read my newsletter on a regular basis, every year I facilitate a self-host user survey. Last year, when we got the results, David joined me on my podcast and we got to chat about them a little bit. This year, we're swapping it around and I'm actually going to join a live stream on his YouTube channel and we're going to talk about the results there. Kind of wanted to do something video and live, so maybe viewers and other users who are interested in adding their input can also do so as well. So, and then lastly, kind of in somewhat similar news to this show, this being the second week we're launching this, I'm also launching another YouTube series this coming weekend. It'll be Saturday the 19th called Let's Deploy, where I'll be live streaming essentially myself deploying an application that I featured recently in the newsletter. It may be because I'd like to use it myself, or maybe I just like to play around with it. And I really like the idea of making it collaborative. So I'll be doing it live. You'll see me deploying it for the first time. I won't research or do anything ahead of time. I'll pull up the documentation. We can dig in together. If anyone wants to join along, you can hop in the chat. You can ask questions. I may ask you questions if I run into issues. And I think it'll be a really interesting format to start digging into new software.
No, I think that's a great idea. I'm sad that I didn't come up with that first. Well done.
Thank you. So that's all of that out of the way now. Now I want to jump into the actual content of the newsletter, kicking off with the news. First item I have here, a new release of Ubuntu came out this week, Oracular Oriel, which is a bit of a tongue twister. I'm not an Ubuntu user myself, but I suppose just the nature of large releases like this, I would encourage everyone who is using Ubuntu, which I think there are probably a lot of people in the self-hosted world who are using Ubuntu, to definitely check that out.
One thing to note about that is my understanding is this isn't a long-term release. This will just be a short-term release. So I guess I've got notes over here. The next long-term release isn't until like 2026. Yeah, I know, right? And my notes may be off on that, but that's what this says April 2026 for Ubuntu version 2604 LTS. But I think with some of the stuff I've read about the 2410 short-term release, it's going to be really neat. They've done some really great stuff with it, with some throwbacks to the 20th anniversary of 4.10 and some of the stuff they've done with that. I think it's going to be really neat to look at.
Oh, that's cool. I guess you have like two types of people, people who stick to the long-term releases and then those who take every release as they come, which is probably me, just not Ubuntu.
Sure, sure.
The next news item I have, I want to spend a little time on, but David, I actually want to kick it over to you for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's actually an application that's new on my radar, which is surprising because I was looking at its GitHub and it has 21,000 stars. I don't know how it's flown under the radar, but in the newsletter later, I actually linked to a video you recently did of this application. So I'll let you talk a little bit about it.
Yeah. So it's ArchiveBox, and I don't even entirely remember how I found it. But I'm really glad I did. You know, I was doing some research. Obviously, a lot of you are going to know about the Internet Archive hack that happened recently. And it was 31 million users had their data exposed. And the problem that I think I have with it, and the biggest part of that, which I know I'm getting off topic for a second, bear with me, is that the passwords that were stored were just hashed and not encrypted. So they were easily reversible. So if you were part of that hack, if you had an account there, please go change your passwords everywhere else where you use that same password. But because of that, I was looking for something kind of on topic and relevant to internet archiving. And I ran across ArchiveBox and I got through. It was super easy to set up. And there are a couple of little things that I wish they had done differently, but I understand why they didn't. Basically it's the opportunity to just put in a URL and say, go, and it will download everything on that URL and then it will hop out to the next level. And then it will kind of continue to hop as long as it feels necessary. And you can eat up a lot of storage that way. But I was also surprised, like as I was going through and doing my video and my recording, when I saw that it had more than 20,000 stars on the GitHub and I'd never heard of it. But I guess the developer of this has also got some other fairly common or fairly well-known apps out there as well. I really dig, maybe I'm thinking of something else. No, I lied. I apologize. I lied. I was thinking of a different video I'd done recently, but no, this is such a cool tool. Especially whether you're trying to preserve, you know, your favorite sites, your favorite, whether it's blog posts or any of the stuff that I'd mentioned in my video, but it's a very cool project. And I feel like it's a good opportunity to kind of contribute to the archiving of the internet as it currently is. It's a really cool project, super easy to set up and lots of options to really customize and configure it to do what you need it to do versus trying to piecemeal things together to get it to do what it might want to do. They've done a really good job with this one.
Yeah. And actually the reason I have this in the news section is because I had come across this, I don't know if it was in Hacker News, I forget where I came across it. Mm-hmm. They're working on a plugin ecosystem,
right,
based on the type of content people want to archive, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was just reading on Reddit, I think today, someone mm-hmm. had asked about, hey, you know, with everything going on with the Internet Archive, can we download it as backup? And someone was like, I'm pretty sure it's like 99 petabytes large or something. Like it's way too big for anyone.
Right.
So just, I think the nature of ArchiveBox and then these plugins, I think are really cool that are hyper-focused on content.
Right.
I think really allows people to kind of narrow in on their corner of the internet, at least where they spend their time to make their contribution as far as archival goes.
Yeah, like, and I really dig that they're going with this plugin option, you know, because there are forums from when I first got on the internet that I wish I could still go back and read through, you know, just little things. And of course, you know, self-hosting wasn't, I mean, it was kind of a thing, but not really. But I think this is going to change how the internet is archived, because we can each contribute a little bit of our hard drive space. And then I think if they could come up with a way to have a federated system of archival. And I know that's a huge ask of the community, but if they could do a federated thing where everybody's hosting just a little bit of everything, it would be kind of a neat way mm-hmm. to take out the risk of something like what happened to the Internet Archive recently.
That's a fantastic idea, actually. I feel like someone who's listening to this and has the skills, there's probably some really cool opportunities there.
I hope so. I hope somebody is able to be smarter than me about that.
So moving on with some of the other news, I have a note in here about Unraid and Tailscale, just because I know there are a lot of my readers and viewers are both Unraiders and Tailscalers. This had popped up in my newsfeed this week. I know Unraid already has all sorts of cool support for Tailscale, but their partnership is becoming official. They are officially and girlfriend now, I think. I think Tailscale will be getting some official integration in the next version of Unraid, which I think is version 7. So if you are, if you use both of those, that is something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And then the last item I have in here, I'm not going to spend any amount of time talking to it because I talked about all the WordPress drama a lot last week. And while it's still very intriguing to me, I just chuckled because I found this article that had referred to it as World War WordPress, what I thought was really funny and, and really clever play on the name. So
I think that's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting thing that's still happening between the two. Just today, I saw an article that I really wanted to put in, but I didn't want to go too heavy on WordPress stuff. If you're interested and aren't up to speed on it, definitely, you know, give it a Google search and get up to speed, because it's been really fascinating to follow along. So with that being said, I want to shift over to software updates. As usual, we've had a good 15 or 20 software updates this week. Wow. There have obviously been a lot more, and I should have talked through this a little bit last week. I follow probably over 500 pieces of software and get look through maybe like 50 releases at least a day every week to compile for the newsletter. So these aren't all of the updates that I've seen this week. So if you're running applications on your server and you're relying on my newsletter to know when to update, please don't, because you're only going to get the major ones, and maybe you only care about the major ones. I don't know. But these are the ones I thought were worth talking about. And I actually want to start with one that I don't have on here, because it's not a major release, but it's something that I thought was worth putting on everyone's radar. Bitwarden had an update for its mobile clients this week. And I know a lot of people self-host either Bitwarden or Vaultwarden.
Sure.
And the update itself wasn't super notable, but in the release notes, I saw they mentioned it was a release to prepare for the upcoming native mobile apps that they're getting to release. So if you're a Bitwarden user and you use their mobile apps, they're really clunky. At least on Android, I'm an Android user, and it's never felt like it's an app that's developed for Android. And so they've separated both iOS and Android, and they're building native apps in their languages. And so I'm not a part of the beta. I'm not that brave, but I've seen the videos they've made of both, and they both, it's like, it looks like an iPhone app. It looks exactly what you would expect for an Android app with its real design guidelines and stuff.
That was, and I'm actually glad that they're doing that. I mean, I know it puts more work on their developers, but somebody recently commented on my Bitwarden or Vaultwarden, I remember which one it was, but commented on one of those videos saying that, or no, it was, anyway, they said, well, this other thing is better because the mobile app is better. And I was like, well, okay. But the reality is, how often, I rarely ever actually log into my Bitwarden app on my phone. It just autofills when I need it to. I authorize it to log in and grab the, I don't ever log in. Like, I do everything in my browser and it just gets synced across all my devices. So, but for those people who do log in regularly, I think that's going to be amazing for them.
Yep, absolutely. I'm the same way. I use autofill, so I don't actually go into the app that often, but it's just one of those things that I want, and I don't know why I want it. So sure. I'm really excited for it. Some of the other updates I think are worth checking out. And as usual, I think this is a good opportunity for discovery for people who may have missed some of the new applications in here that were probably part of the launches section a couple weeks ago and now are updates. Just right off the bat, this Adventure Log app is really cool. Mostly because I don't think there's anything really like it. It's a travel tracker and trip planner. And so, you know, for the people who like to document and plan everything, it has a lot of really cool functionality that you might be able to find in other tracking software, but there's some really cool things here that are specific to trip planning and travel that I think are really cool. So a couple larger updates this week, but in totality, without these, I think this is something worth checking out for sure.
Nice.
Bezel's another one. David, did you did a video on Bezel, did you not?
I did, recently, yeah.
I think.
I did. Within the last couple of months, I did a video on Bezel, and it was received really well. It's a great little interface to see what's going on what's going on in all of your different servers you've got attached to it. Mm-hmm. Very cool little project.
Yeah, I remember you had posted a video, and then on Mastodon, I remember there was a lot of chatter about it. I was very surprised. Not that it's not great software. I'm sure it's great. I haven't spun it up myself. But this really seemed to have stuck the landing for this particular use case.
It's a toned down version of Grafana, effectively, where you can just get the data you need without having to build out a dozen dashboards for every little minute thing. And I sometimes appreciate simplicity just for quick reference.
Yeah. Honestly, that makes sense. I think Grafana can be intimidating.
100%.
A little intimidating. So it's probably filling a void there for people who want that, but have never, you know, been brave enough to deploy to Grafana. Mm-hmm. I promise I'm not going to go through all these one by one, but I do want to hit the next one on the list, DocCheck. The update wasn't super large this week. They added Discord notifications, but I want to plug it because this is actually how I update my containers. So I follow a ton of software and have them all. I plug in via RSS so I get notified when their releases are. But as far as actually updating them, it's a really handy command line tool where I just execute a command. I actually have like a bash alias I use to easily execute it. It'll check the registry for all my containers, and then it'll list all the ones that have updates, and I can choose all of them. I can choose specific ones. Oh. It's like a really cool way of automating updates, but not automating. So I still have control, but I don't have to go through the Docker, you know, pool and prune afterwards. It takes care of all of that. So
that's really cool. I have to look at that. I use Watchtower for all of that. Watchtower and Godify to get notified about it, but I'll have to look at DocCheck.
Yeah, it's similar to Watchtower in that it kind of does all the same things. It's just from the command line, and you can automate things. I know people say not to, and we're all a little guilty of that at times. Couple other things. GoToSocial is an ActivityPub server. A lot of people on the Fediverse use it for a single instance. And that had a relatively large update this week. Mostly the reason I love following them is because they always have fun names for the releases. I forget what it is, this update. Selective Sloth, their mascot is a sloth. So whenever I see them posting on the Fediverse, I normally make a joke about trying to figure out what their name is or if I can contribute to it.
That's awesome.
Image had a new update. It actually makes an appearance in the Breaking Changes. They updated the internal port, which I think messed a lot of people up who don't look at release notes when they update. Mm. So, you know, if they're running Caddy as their proxy server pointed to Image, I think it was maybe port 3000 before, and they switched it to the one they had exposed since the beginning. But I think a lot of people updated. The update went fine, but their domain was just pointed at the right port. Exactly. So if you haven't updated the Image, just pay attention to that when you do so this weekend. And then the last one I wanted to talk to, and then David, I'll pass it over to you if you have any particular ones that stood out. There's this maybe budget application that this week released their first production ready release. And I have not used it, but it is on my radar because I actually have, if you're not familiar with my site, I have a directory of applications that's just for browsing and for people to discover. And maybe is on here. I can't remember where exactly it is, but you can search for it. It's relatively high on the list when you sort by stars because there's 30,000 stars on GitHub, but it's not the top. But when I look at my web analytics, I just track like, you know, technical details about users and what they click so I can see what people are drawn to. Sure. It is always one of the most popular things people click, which is surprising because it hasn't had a production ready release before this week. So I don't know if people are just dying for a new budget app. I use Actual and I really like it. So I'm not sure, but it's on my to-do list for the weekend to check it out because there's a lot of buzz around it. And now it seems like it's in shape for people to maybe start hosting it. I had the GitHub page up here and it looks really slick and streamlined.
Yeah. I have to wonder about importing transactions and that sort of stuff. Of course, I haven't dug into it too much, but I have to wonder about how that would be handled. I haven't I have to dig into that. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's always a sticking point with budget apps. And actually, it looks like they have their backstory on their GitHub page. It looks like it was not built to be open source or self-hosted, but some things happened, and now they've revived it as an open source project. So that's really cool. It's actually similar to Actual Budget. I think they went through something similar where the developer had it or had developed it, owned it, used it as a business, then eventually abandoned it and just made it open source. So.
Gotcha. All right. Maybe that's cool.
A running theme for budgeting apps. Anything stick out to you, David, that you wanted to talk through? If not, we can move to the next section.
Actually, two things real quick regarding Image. I know we're going to come back to that later with the breaking change. I actually discovered recently that there is an app. And I can't think of the name of it. We were talking about it in Discord today, where you can basically, it's like an image picture frame app. So you can like just have it like on a tablet, you know, like on your table or whatever, and just have it image frame. There it is. Or maybe it was, I think it was image frame. It was, because it's got the Android app as well. But I thought that was really cool. I don't have Image set up, but Image Frame makes me want to get Image set up. So it's a weird way to get there, but that's really neat. I'm really excited to check out Image Frame.
It definitely has a cult following, and I've noticed this little like ecosystem popping up behind it. You can see I have three at least companion apps for it, which is unusual for any platform. It's been cool to see these come together.
But it shows how well their app is built, that people can keep building these companion apps for it to extend the functionality in a way that they want versus being reliant on what's pre-built. I think that's really good of them to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
The only other thing in here was Squirrel Servers Manager. If you're not familiar with that, I checked it out. And basically, it's a really cool dashboard for like Ansible stuff. So you can have it go and look at your servers and do updates automatically on scripts. I just went Ansible and Semaphore. But I had somebody kind of hold my hand through Ansible and Semaphore. But now that I have a bit of a better understanding, I'm going to take another look at Squirrel Servers, because it's a very cool idea with how they've got it built.
Yeah, let's check this out here. I know I've looked through it before, and I think this is relatively new. I feel like this popped up for the first time, at least on my radar, just a couple months ago. I mean, I remember it looking really slick, and it is actually.
Yeah, no, it's, but I didn't understand like the process of setting, because like when you're looking through like Semaphore, I think it's the Semaphore dashboard is the graphical user interface for Ansible. You have to like start at the bottom of the list of like the sidebar menu. You have to start at the bottom and work your way up because it's like the stuff you'll use the most down to the stuff you'll do the least. And it's that initial setup at the bottom that was confusing to me.
Got it.
But now that I have a better understanding of kind of those steps, I'm definitely going to go back and look at Squirrel again, because it's a cool idea. And it's, I mean, honestly, it's got a cute logo too. So, you know, sometimes a logo will sell me on a project just as much as the project itself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a sucker for nice graphics and interfaces as well.
Yeah.
Want to kick off, just head to new software to chat about this for a bit. It was actually a relatively light week. I feel like the last couple of weeks I've had like 20, 25 software launches, which I kind of expect heading into colder weather, at least here in the US. There's definitely a correlation, I think, with the amount of time people spend indoors developing things in colder weather versus warmer weather. But
yeah,
at least to me, a few standouts. First off, the first one I have listed here, Collections. Not necessarily something I'm looking for. I am a Plex user, but I'm not like super anal about my collections. I just wanted to give the project kudos for naming itself Collections and not something that ends with two R's. I feel like that's the common thing, even when they're not related to like the typical suite, the R suite that we're used to. So kudos to the developer for that.
Well, and they did the EX in the middle, I think, kind of as a shout out. Obviously the E is there, but I think they did that as the correlation to Plex. And I think that was very well thought out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's tasteful. They're not like infringing on trademark or copyright. So I don't think Plex is going to get upset with them, but it's kind of obvious when you look at the name, what it's for, or at least what application or software it's targeted at.
Yep.
And the other one I wanted to call out is Flatter, which it looks, the name looks really funny to me for some reason. It is a front end for Jellyfin, which I think is really cool. And I've used Jellyfin on and off in my self-hosting journey. But when I hear people trying to decide whether they're ready to jump from Plex to Jellyfin, one of the biggest concerns is always, what does the client landscape look like? Is there a nice desktop client? Are there mobile clients? Can I run it on my TV? Yeah. And so I just covered a really great mobile client called Streamyfin just last week, actually, in the newsletter in the content spotlight. And then I saw this popped up, and it's really cool. It's just a really simple interface, and that's kind of what they, how they market themselves as. But it has a ton of great features, and it's just cool to see more options popping up from the community. And I think that's where open source software shines. I remember when they launched this in the comment section, I feel like someone's always comes in and asks, well, why not just contribute to the official client, or what's different about this? And maybe that's a fair point. You know, maybe there's work to be done on the main clients that might further the platform, but it's really cool to just see people be able to say, hey, I want something different. I'm going to build something different, and it's going to be catered to my needs. If other people want to use it, great. If not, you know, there are five other front ends or clients you can use as well.
I think when you get into, you know, like the official clients for a lot of different things, there ends up being a lot of politics and bureaucracy and getting changes made, because our users have known it for this way for so long. If we change it, people are going to scream. Mm-hmm. And the objective is to not get people to scream. So if you can create something that works for you and other people like, then I say have at.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as new software, those were the ones that stuck out to me. Again, all these are great. I think people have spent time developing them. So even if I'm not specifically speaking to them, I would encourage everyone to check them out. David, any stick out to you that maybe we didn't mention?
I'm intrigued by ProxTag. I've actually seen some like screenshots of people putting those on e-ink displays. And I think that's, yeah, it kind of looks like that. And I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know if I would use it. I don't know if I'd want to manage my project, my server on something smaller than my phone.
Right.
But I think it's a very intriguing idea that somebody took the time. Maybe this started out as a, you know, a coding project to learn something, and they're like, hey, let's just run with it. But I think it's a cool idea, and I'm glad that people are thinking outside the box for different things like that.
Absolutely. I think I found this on the Raspberry Pi subreddit this week. Ah. And I feel like a lot of the projects that on there they're often novel projects that, you know, people wouldn't necessarily say, you should do this. It's often like, hey, I can do this, so I'm going to try and do it and prove I can do it. This is one of those things that looks cool. I don't know that it would be super useful for me, but I want to do it just because I think it looks cool. So
exactly. Yeah.
Adding it to the list of to-dos this weekend. Cool. So want to jump into, we have a section on breaking changes, and actually have a fair amount of larger updates with breaking changes. Forgio updates, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I know I've looked up their pronunciation before. And I cannot think, I cannot remember if that's the right way to pronounce it, but this is the, like Giti spinoff, like Git Software Forge have some things going on. When I read the release notes for this, I didn't get the impression that a majority of the users would be impacted by some of the things that are happening here. But that middle point about token scope changes, I don't think that's going to break anything for anyone. I think it just has to do with authentication, and people might have to re-authenticate. So
sure,
if you're using this in update and you have issues with it, check out the release notes and see if that's what's driving it.
Cool.
And then we've talked a little bit about Image. Their new internal port has updated to match what they've always exposed. They have some deprecated API endpoints. I actually think one of the, I can't remember if it was Image Kiosk, or was it Image Frame popped up last week in breaking changes because they required a minimum supported version of Image. And I wonder now if that's because of some of these deprecated API endpoints that they're coming about.
Gotcha.
So JellySeer is a popular kind of media tracker request that, that people use alongside Jellyfin. There's some breaking changes with that. I know there are a fair amount of users that I come across for that. So please take a look at that. And then Stump, if you use Stump as well, when you upgrade and you're managing and maintaining your database, you will need to run some migrations along with the upgrade.
Interesting. Okay.
And now one of my favorite sections in the newsletter, latest directory apps. These are just new applications that I've come across in my research. And as I'm just browsing communities and forums and news, that I don't have a part of my application directory. And I often find a lot of really good gems in here that I just want to shout from the rooftops, like, hey, this exists. Everyone should check it out. But it's also one of those things that all of these are really cool. And so sometimes it feels weird calling just one out versus the other. But you'll see some of the ones I find just from the update. So Adventure Log is popping up, Flatter's popping up. There are a couple dashboards that popped up this week. I think dashboard, when you look at the categories in the directory, dashboard might be one of the more populated categories because there are a lot of dashboards, and I guess people are just really
people
driven.
Love dashboards.
They really do. They love, and there are all sorts of dashboard lovers. There are simple, minimal dashboarders, and there are people who have so much information and data on their dashboards. I don't even know where to start when I look at them, but I'm not judging because, again, the beauty of open source is to everyone their own. If there's something you want, there's probably something out there that'll meet your needs.
100%.
In other self-host related news, I don't normally publish a ton of regular content outside of the newsletter. This week I did publish a new podcast episode. I recently got to sit down with Paula Scoutson, who's the Home Assistant founder. He's the president of the Open Home Foundation.
Nice.
It was a really cool conversation. The way I do my podcast is we chat via video and I just record the audio and post that. And for half the conversation, Palace was flashing prototypes in front of the camera of things that are to come. And it was really cool and makes me really excited and really jealous that I don't have them now. so I guess if you're similar to that, maybe don't listen to this podcast episode.
Okay.
And then a couple of cool community driven content. So I normally try and include a section in the newsletter, just content driven by the community. Sometimes it's developers and sometimes it's just other people like you and I, David, who are self-hosters and want to contribute. And so I have an article here from Akash who writes fantastic articles. Every time I see him pop up, it's almost guaranteed that I'm going to throw his article into my newsletter.
Nice.
He's talking about PearDrop, which I am familiar with. People use it to transfer files quickly to and from each other. Admittedly, I feel like I never have a need for something like that. And I don't know if I'm not in the right social circles where I'm not sharing things with people enough. But enough people need it's the demand is there. And so if you're interested in that, I would highly recommend checking out his article.
Yeah.
The next thing I have listed is a GitHub repository put together by Adam Monson, who earlier this year, I've included him a bunch in the newsletter because he wrote a really great book about self-hosting that I should probably list in the show notes for anyone who wants to check out. Really great introductory information and courses for people who are looking to get in, might be intimidated by the Linux aspect of self-hosting. Of course, you don't need to use Linux, but many people do.
Sure.
But anyway, he put together some examples on how to isolate or how to increase security in your home lab via Docker network isolation. Hmm. So some really cool examples. He looks at traffic. He has a caddy example in here. So this is something you're interested in or maybe haven't thought about before. I think this would be a great resource to start with.
Nice.
Next community content article is a note-taking article. I feel like this is one of the most popular self-hosted categories in the world.
Agreed.
For me, it's always, especially in my directory, I don't know what the line is between note-taking and documentation and wikis anymore. When I add something, I'm like, is this for notes? Is this for wikis? And like, they all bleed together at some point.
Yeah. And in fact, it's one of the more popular, I can almost guarantee good views on any video that I do that's note-taking wikis or documentation. I'm always looking for a new thing there, just because I know it's going to perform well.
Yeah. People just love documenting, and maybe that's just like the personality type that's drawn to sure. self-hosting, or maybe there just aren't enough good hosted services. but I featured this one because I feel like everyone's familiar with Standard Notes. NoteSnook is another previously, I think, proprietary platform, but they recently released a self-hosted version of their Sync server. So I think it's currently in beta, but I called it out when it happened. I don't know, maybe it was a month or two ago, or at least when it made it onto my radar. But if anyone liked the appeal of NoteSnook, it is like a really nice looking application. It is one step closer to maybe what people are seeking when they think of open source and self-hosted software. So nice. This is a great site. It's Foss News that I follow closely. Someone was just documenting their journey about shifting over to NoteSnook and what they thought about it.
Cool.
So, and then lastly, in my content spotlight, talked a little bit about Formbricks this week. Formbricks is a survey platform. Although not the survey platform I facilitated my survey with, it is another great and popular survey platform. I feel like this is probably the one I see most recommended when people are asking for surveys and forms and just ways to collect feedback from people. Features a really nice drag and drop interface. I feel like a lot of self-hosted survey platforms aren't super pleasing to the eyes, and they can be a little difficult. Last year, I used Lime Survey for my survey, and it's really powerful, but it wasn't always intuitive, and it wasn't super pretty. And I don't want to do that team a disservice by trash talking them, but sure. I do really like seeing things like Formbricks pop up that have a really nice interface and just feel good to use and put things together.
That's awesome.
And then lastly, I do want to hit the what I'm watching section this week, because David, you make an appearance here. Again, we already talked about your Archive Box video, but if you weren't familiar with David before, which I'm certain most people probably are,
sure.
Especially if you read my newsletter with any regularity. I actually also featured you in a content spotlight a couple months ago because I love your content so much.
Oh, thank you.
Should definitely go check it out.
Appreciate that.
And I think that is about it for content in this week's newsletter. Again, David and I are going to be collaborating this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on his YouTube channel on the results of the self-host user survey. David, admittedly, I'm still putting the results together for that.
Fair enough.
I tried my hardest this year to make the responses straightforward. Like I wanted people to be able to give me responses that I hadn't thought of, but the free text forms kill me because people, you know, in the favorite software question, people will spell Nextcloud like 10 different ways. And so compiling and aggregating all those results is so difficult and it's so time consuming.
Have you thought about setting up like an AI thing to help you with some of that?
Honestly, I hadn't even thought about that, but it's a really good idea because it's the most time consuming part about the survey.
I believe it. I 100% believe that. I don't envy combing through that much data. But I'll be stoked to go through it with you when you're done.
Yeah. You get the fun part for sure.
I do. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it as well. David, I'm happy to include links in the show notes. Can you talk about a little bit about maybe where people can find you if they want to find out more about you and follow you on other platforms?
Honestly, what I always tell people is go to my YouTube channel. I'm easy to find there. And then if you go into the about section up at the top little banner there, I've got a link that'll just take you to all of my social medias because I'm all over the place and not everything is the same. I've got different names in different places because things were taken when I set up those accounts. And
yeah, who doesn't?
And so like I've got my own link tree, alternative link stack, or I think it's link stack set up. You can just find me that way. I hate to cop out like that, but that's the easiest way to do it is go up to my banner in my YouTube page and find me there.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And then same with me. I also spin up LinkStack if you want to connect with me on other platforms, ethanshally.com. And of course, you can just navigate to my website, and that's where my self-hosted content is.
Nice.
David, thanks again so much for joining me. This has been great. I'm
really
looking forward to connecting again on Sunday to chat about the survey.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much.
Yep. And thanks everyone for listening. Have a good weekend.